We're ready to proceed with the first case, which is Jakes Fireworks v. Department of Labor, 17-9536. Counsel, if you'll enter your appearance, please.
May it please the Court, my name is Eric Clausen, appearing on behalf of Jakes Fireworks, the appellant. Your Honors, on August 12, 2014, a fire erupted while two Jakes Fireworks employees were cleaning out a storage container. Tragically, one of the employees lost his life and another was injured. OSHA and the State Fire Marshal both conducted investigations immediately thereafter, but the cause of the fire was never determined. OSHA issued five citations to Jakes, which were confirmed by the ALJ after trial on the merits, and by this appeal, Jake seeks to have three of those citations vacated. When you boil down the ALJ and the Secretary's position, I think it's really that a fire occurred, and so you have citations. And the accident speaks for itself. This is really just re ipsa loquitur, which is not allowed in OSH Act citations. We could address that in our brief, in the AmSlab roof case and the Crowley case. So I think that's a basis alone for vacating these citations. But today, I think it goes to the heart of some major flaws with each citation that I want to touch on. Briefly, citation one, item one, that's the general hazard standard. It says you can't expose employees to an undue hazard to life. And there's just not facts sufficient. There's not substantial evidence to support a finding of an undue hazard. You have the only mention of housekeeping issues, but under their own combustible dust directive, it says that loose powder, which is a central piece of evidence for their housekeeping issues, loose powder is not normally even a housekeeping issue or a violation. And that's, if you want it to be a violation, you've got to take samples of it. Citation 1, item 4 is the one that involves combustible dust. That's the industrial powered fork truck requirement that says you can't operate fork trucks if you have combustible dust. And I believe that one's quite clear. The directive says you have to take samples, you have to send them to be tested. That wasn't done. Without that testing, you have no evidence of combustible dust.
Does the regulation say anything about that? I'm not talking about the directive, but the regulation on which the citation was based. Does it say anywhere about collecting dust?
The regulation does not, but the regulation doesn't provide a definition of combustible dust. And the parties both agree. The ALJ recognized at trial that you have to look to the directive for a definition. So when you go to the directive, it gives a narrative definition, and then it lays out the specifications, the testing requirements, the sampling requirements. It's very direct. It provides a scientific, objective, verifiable, black-and-white test for whether you have combustible dust. Without the directive, you're just left with this subjective, that's combustible dust.
Well, the Secretary, though, has interpreted the regulation in combination with the directive as not having required the inspector to collect samples, correct?
That is their position, I believe.
That is their position.
Yeah.
And don't we owe that position some deference, given that they're interpreting their regulation and the related directive?
Well, I think we owe a deference to the extent that there's a reasonable position to be taken within that deference. Here, I don't believe there is. The directive says you must take samples, you shall send it to be tested. And in all the cases that we've reviewed, we haven't found a single case where you have a combustible dust citation that was upheld without proper testing and sampling.
Aren't they relying on this pyrotechnic exception?
There's not a pyrotechnic exception. I think they pointed to the pyrotechnic directive, which says that combustible dust or the pyrotechnic composition is combustible. And I think
that's the directive, but isn't there reference in the combustible dust directive itself that speaks to that?
I don't believe there's language that says that the testing doesn't have to take place.
As to manufacturers?
Your Honor, I'm not aware of that. I believe the directive says specifically that you have to take samples.
The language of the directive, there's that word potential. If they find that there are potential combustible dust hazards, which suggests to me that there is an inspection and they are uncertain, so they take a sample. Here, of course, we had a fire. Doesn't that make a difference?
I don't believe it makes a difference because you don't have, well, first you don't have a cause of the fire determined. Nobody knows what exactly caused this fire. So I think that the regulation about combustible dust doesn't talk about fires. And I understand that's in the context, but here I think it's black and white. All the cases, you have cases where you have coal dust suspended in the air, in the National Coal case.
Well, in those cases, it seems to me that they highlight the difference between where you have a pyrotechnic dust versus a dust where it may or may not be combustible depending upon the concentration of a particular substance. Here, we know that the black powder used in the fireworks is combustible.
Well, I don't think we know that this black powder was combustible. I think that's why the test accounts for things like moisture, like contamination, like how much it's compacted, if it's confined to a space. coal dust and grain dust, I think, are pretty notorious. You've seen in the news that they can combust. Everything in this courtroom, including you and I, can combust given certain conditions, and I think that's the point of the directive.
Well, the directive says that the basic component of pyrotechnics is black powder, a mix of 75% potassium nitrate, 15% charcoal, and 10% sulfur. I mean, we already know what we're dealing with here. It's not an unknown factor of combustibility.
Well, I think we know certain characteristics given certain circumstances. Here in this case, the actual facts of this case, we don't have a sample. We don't know exactly what that composition was. And in fact, as we pointed out in the brief, fireworks contain things like clay, like rice holes. We don't know exactly what the fire marshal saw. We don't know what it was that ignited the fire. It may not even have been pyrotechnic composition. I think that the record talks about that the composition was moist. So I think that that's the point we're making, is that we don't know. The Secretary make kind of, again, this res ipsa, well, it's fireworks. It's got to be.
Well, I understand the res ipsa, but let's stick with the directive and this particular citation. Is it your position that the substantial evidence requirement for affirmance here cannot be met without testing? Is that your position?
That is our position, Your Honor. And again, I guess I would to address the Secretary's contention that they don't have to follow this directive. I think there's no case law to support that. The cases that they've cited, I think, don't deal directly with that issue. They deal with waivers by employers of rights, and they deal with lack of harm to the employer, lack of prejudice. Here, we're certainly dealing with the prejudice. I think if they're allowed to forego the testing requirements, then we face a citation. We're clearly prejudiced by that. I'd like to turn now to citation 2, item 1. That's the hazard communication requirement. And that's the regulation that says that if your employer is dealing with hazardous chemicals, you have to participate in this hazard communication program. Jake's Fireworks doesn't deal with hazardous chemicals. We import finished consumer products, packaged, ready to go on the shelf. They're regulated by multiple agencies before they even get here. So they're exempted under the articles exemption. And the articles exemption says that if it has three prongs to it. The first two prongs are not at issue here. Both parties agree, and I think the ALJ recognized that pyrotechnic 1.4G fireworks meet those criteria. So it's item 3 that's under contention here. And it says that a manufactured item, which under normal conditions of use does not release more than very small quantities of hazardous chemicals, and does not pose a physical hazard or health risk to employees. So the ALJ essentially took that third prong and created two prongs out of it to make a four-part test. She separated the propositive modifier under normal conditions of use and left it only applying to the release of chemicals and not to the item being a physical hazard. That substantially changes the meaning of this exception. And I think we've cut in our brief the canons of construction that this court has affirmed in the Osage Wind case, I think provided clearly that under normal conditions of use applies to all the elements in that series, which includes physical hazard.
Well, normal conditions of use, you and your brief seem to say it's the normal conditions of use of the ultimate purchaser of the fireworks. But these standards are for protection of the employees. So we should be looking at normal conditions of use from the perspective of the employees, shouldn't we?
You're correct, Your Honor.
So storage and handling would be included in that.
Sure. And so under storage and handling, these items are not a physical hazard. They're in a box. They're moved around.
But they do contain explosive material.
They do contain.
There are warnings on the package.
Sure. But I think it's important here to consider that these are again, consumer items. This is the same thing in the same condition that goes on a shelf that an 8-year-old comes in with his dad, picks it out, takes it home, looks at it, looks at the packaging, takes it, and lights it on fire, let alone handles it and stores it. And that's regulated by CPSC, by DOT. They have to be, before these products can even be imported or even produced, they have to be approved by DOT according to the 87-1 specifications. 87-1 is adopted by DOT at 49 CFR 173.64 and .65. So before we even produce them, they're approved. They're tested by an independent third party. They're brought over. CPSC regulates them and tests them. So if consumers can use them and they're not a physical hazard when they're lit on fire, normal handling, shipping and handling of them, where they're not set on fire, is certainly not a physical hazard. I don't think the public would have access to them if they were a physical hazard just in and of themselves. And that's why I think that this normal conditions of use is so important. Without it, obviously, I think the finding is arbitrary and capricious because you're applying simply the wrong law. It changes this dramatically. Without that modifier, it essentially means that any product that's a physical hazard under any circumstance, it doesn't fit the exception. I think that would basically make the exception worthless. Nothing would
fit. Does OSHA's interpretation of this definition of articles affect, should we give that deference?
In this case, no. I think that this is, again, this is very clear. I think this court has affirmed that the reading of this. I think that OSHA's reading of this, quite honestly, just it helps to fit the citation in this case. But I don't think it
OSHA,
makes...
in the rules and regulation page, which neither party cited here, says, it's talking about when it was amended, says the new definition differs from the current one in that it includes, as articles, items which release not more than very small quantities, minute or trace amounts of a hazardous chemical, as long as these items do not pose a physical risk or health risk to employees. Doesn't say anything about the normal use. It just says the traces of the hazardous chemical have to not pose a risk to the employees.
Your Honor, I think it's important to, even if that is the case, even under that interpretation, there's still no evidence that a consumer firework is a physical hazard, and it doesn't release any chemicals, certainly. It's a finished packaged item. So I think even under a correct reading, I think this is important, there's no evidence in the record that these are a physical hazard, they release hazardous chemicals. So correct reading, incorrect reading, I think either way the citation should be vacated. There's either not substantial evidence or it's arbitrary and capricious, one of the two.
So your position is that fireworks do not contain a hazardous chemical that could be a risk to employees?
I don't think they contain hazardous.
They don't contain a hazardous chemical at all?
They're composed of hazardous chemicals, perhaps. I think, again, under certain circumstances. Here we're not dealing with what are they composed of. We're dealing with do they release hazardous chemicals.
Well, doesn't this fly in the face of the evidence that there was debris and gunpowder strewn around this facility? I mean, you keep talking about self-contained, but that doesn't sound very self-contained.
Well, again, this is where normal conditions of use comes in. And under normal conditions of use, they're in a package, they're boxed up, they're on a pallet, they're wrapped. That's normal conditions of use. I think...
Why wouldn't it be normal sometimes for a package to... become not self-contained in the course of storage and moving it around and that sort of thing. That seemed to have happened at this location.
Well, the location of the accident, it was actually a cleanup operation from an old site.
I understand.
So I think that that's that's distinct from normal conditions of use. And again, normal would, I think, indicate what normally goes on, what's most likely to happen, what happens more often than not. And that is that packages are handled in a proper way and you don't have things being destroyed.
Shouldn't there be a safe means by which to clean up a facility that the company has moved out of? Why isn't it normal to clean up afterwards? And the cleanup involves cleaning up after the debris and gunpowder that was in proximity to the forklift truck.
Well, I think there are means to clean up properly, and I think that
isn't that the whole point of having the regulation about the proper forklift?
Well, I think that those regulations, well, the forklift, again, without combustible dust, that doesn't come into play, and we don't believe it does, but I think the other regulations regarding cleanup or housekeeping issues, they're NFPA violations. We weren't cited for any of those violations. They're not an issue in this case. The Secretary chose to make to cite to these citations, and we don't believe that any of them fit, Your Honor. I see I'm out of time.
You are out of time.
I am out of time. Thank you.
Better appreciate your argument, and we'll hear from counsel.
May it please the Court, Ron Gottlieb for the Secretary of Labor. I think I can be brief. I'm going to focus on what he's argued today unless the Court has questions about anything else in the briefs. I just wanted to point out that the argument that the cause of the fire has never been determined and this is his res ipsa loquitur overstates the case. The fire inspector testified that the most likely cause of the inspection was ignition of loose fireworks on the floor of the container. And he couldn't determine from the various potential ignition sources that he identified which one was the most likely to have ignited that loose powder. But all of them are related to the handling of the fireworks in the container. So it's using the accident as evidence of the undue hazard was perfectly appropriate and is not res ipsa loquitur reasoning. As for the directive, the directive establishes a national emphasis program for inspecting industries other than manufacturers of fireworks that handle combustible dust. Nothing in the directive or in the unreviewed ALJ decisions on which the ALJ, on which Jakes relies, says that combustible dust testing is required regardless of the type of dust involved, the weight of the other evidence that's presented on combustible dust, or the purpose of the inspection. Regardless of whether OSHA should have expanded the inspection to perform an inspection under the National Emphasis Program is irrelevant because it did not. It conducted a fatality inspection. The fatality inspection was looking backward at the conditions that occurred at the time of the accident that caused the fatality. The National Emphasis Program would have been forward-looking. You would have taken the dust samples, say, you know, this is a combustible dust hazard. Let me
make sure I understand the terminology you're using. When you say the National Emphasis Program, is that the combustible dust directive?
That's the directive on combustible dust that they've been relying on.
Okay, let's call it that. That might be a little more clear. And so my question then is whether the combustible dust directive applies to the regulation here that was the basis for the citation. That is the 1910-178-C273 truck combustible dust regulation.
No. I mean, it's not an attempt to interpret or apply 1910-178. It's intended to establish an inspection program for industries that handle combustible dust.
I need to get a clear answer to this because this is an issue where I'm having some trouble.
Okay.
If you can help me with this. So we have this citation. It's the regulation about using the forklift.
Correct.
And my question is, according to opposing counsel, that there was a need to take samples under the combustible dust directive to justify this citation, and that wasn't done. And your response to that is what?
No, the directive did not apply to the inspection at the compliance officer.
Okay, and why not?
Because he was conducting a fatality inspection and not an inspection under the National Emphasis Program created by the directive.
So the directive is not even relevant from
I don't think it's relevant. It's not relevant to any particular standard that is an issue in this case.
Is it because there's a fire or because there's a fatality that it's not relevant?
Well, the fire is relevant, but it's not because there's a fire. It is because, one, the directive indicates that it doesn't apply to manufacturers of fireworks, and there's a separate directive on fireworks manufacturers, which indicates we know fireworks are combustible. We don't need to do testing.
But Jakes wasn't a manufacturer.
It depends on how broad the term manufacturer is used in the directive. The pyrotechnics directive included more than just manufacturers. It included importers that assembled fireworks. And they broke down and reassembled fireworks. So it could be that they intended the pyrotechnics.
Well, what's the Secretary's position? If the combustible dust directive does apply here, does the manufacturer's provision, what's the Secretary's position?
If the directive applied, the inspector should have taken samples and required dust, and done combustibility testing. But that doesn't lessen the probative value of the evidence that was presented.
Okay, so what you're saying is that if it applies, the testing should have been done, but failure to test was not fatal to the citation.
Correct.
Why is that?
Because the issue before the ALJ was the probative value of the evidence presented before her on the case. The directive is to establish an effective enforcement program for OSHA. It doesn't say anything about the probative value of other evidence, such as the conclusions of a fire inspector that the substance at issue is fireworks material, or from the definitions of what fireworks are, or from the material safety data sheet and other representations as to the content of the container as containing fireworks. So the probative value of the fire inspector, the Jake's employees that said these were fireworks, the definition of what fireworks are, the warnings on the packages, the material safety data sheet, all established that this dust that was in the container was combustible dust. You can absolutely meet the substantial evidence standard without combustibility testing.
But your position is that the testing doesn't apply at all. Because
it didn't apply
the directive with respect to combustible dust doesn't apply in this situation.
It didn't apply to the inspection.
Okay, where would I go if I wanted to see the Secretary's the written authority for the basis of that opinion that it doesn't apply? Is it written in the directive?
I think it's an interpretive issue regarding the directives themselves and also the purpose of the directive. As I said, it was to establish a program for conducting inspections under that directive. But we didn't conduct the inspection under that directive.
Is there a guidance document somewhere that says that?
Only the directives themselves. Both of the I don't know of any.
And does the directive somewhere say that specifically?
Well, it provides examples as to when you should expand the inspection to include an inspection under the National Emphasis Program. And there is language that indicates that the compliance officer, at least arguably, but probably should have or the area office should have expanded the inspection instead of limiting its inquiry into what caused the accident into are there still hazards present at the site that need to be addressed, which is what the National Emphasis Program inspection would have been directed to, in which we would have had arguably conduct combustibility testing. But even if the other aspect of the argument is, even if it was even if we were required to do it, it would be harmless error because it's there's no effect on the value of the probative value of the other evidence that was presented. The ALJ couldn't ignore the other evidence that was presented on the combustibility of firework dust.
And by that you mean the broken fireworks and the collection
correct.
Of powder.
Correct. That ignited and started the fire.
So I want to make sure I understand your answer to Judge McHugh's question. You said a couple of times now that because this was a fatality investigation, that the directive doesn't apply. Does the directive exempt fatality investigations anywhere? I mean, where's
no,
this?
No. I don't.
Where can we find some support other than what you're saying?
Well, I think I did try to cite in the brief the purposes. The fatality inspection is what were the conditions on August 12th when the fire erupted? He got there August 13th. If he won, the directive said you. There is a provision that talks about when you're there to inspect the fatality. You know. Expand it and do an inspection under the National Emphasis Program. They didn't do that. But what I'm trying, the point I'm trying, you know, so there's provisions on that I think we cited in our brief in the directive as to when you should expand a fatality inspection or expand an inspection that was initiated for some other purpose. And what I'm trying to make clear, the fatality was what were the conditions on August 12th?
Well, if there hadn't been a fatality but just severe injury, then we'd be talking about a different.
I think the process would be the same whether you're there for a catastrophic accident or anything. But the focus of the inspection was what were the conditions on August 12th that led to a fire, or were there any violations relevant to that accident?
Mr.
On August 13th, when he got there. The compliance officer could say, oh, on the directive, I'm supposed to expand it to not limit to what happened on August 12th, but let me see what's here on August 13th and see are there any abatement actions that need to be taken to address the combustible dust that I see there. And there, the combustible dust directive's provisions would say, conduct, you know, take samples and do the test. But my argument would be the same, that the fact that they didn't do it wouldn't mean that there's no substantial evidence for the proposition that the fireworks are a combustible dust, because it's a fire inspector.
So just to sum up, you're saying the combustible dust directive doesn't apply here because it was a fatality investigation, but even if it did, and it should have, and samples should have been taken, harmless error. That's your position?
Correct. That's a fair statement in my position.
Could I ask you, Mr. Clausen said without combustible dust, the kind of forklift does not come into play. Do you agree with that statement?
Well, it depends if you make a distinction between, if you think that fireworks aren't combustible dust. They clearly shouldn't have used the fireworks to clean up loose fireworks. Yeah, it's clear from the testimony and the NFPA standard.
Well, the distinction I'm trying to make is the difference between atmospheric dust and then what we see in subsection 7 here, deposits or accumulations of such dust. That doesn't sound like it's atmospheric.
No, we were relying on the deposits to accumulate. I think the ALJ in theory of the citation was the deposits and accumulations of dust.
So is the answer that it does matter what kind of a forklift was used?
Absolutely. The standard prohibits the type of forklift they were using if there's either combustible dust in the air, which is governed primarily by another provision, and then there's another provision, the cited provision,
the preceding one.
When it's deposits or accumulations. But whether it's in the air or deposits or accumulation, they couldn't use that fire, that type of forklift, as long as you accept the proposition that fireworks are combustible dust.
And final question. If their argument is that even when you see broken fireworks, that it could include things that aren't combustible, such as clay, cardboard, various things, and that therefore you can't assume that the concentration of black powder was enough to make it combustible dust without testing. Do you have a response to that?
There's no evidence or logic to that. The fireworks testing and the fireworks, the internal composition of or portion of the fireworks is combustible. And it combusts. The fact that there are other non-combustible portions, which are like clay, that make up part of the fireworks, doesn't make the combustible parts non-combustible. And unless there are any further questions, Secretary requests that petition for review be denied.
Thank you, Counsel. I think we've exhausted everyone's time, so I'd like to thank Counsel for your arguments. The case will be submitted, and Counsel are excused.